is a workshop speaker meeting on the topic of service fills the soul, and we have asked Nikki and Nick to speak. I would like to introduce our first speaker, Nick.
My name's Nick. I'm an addict.
Sitting here before the meeting thinking about, like, when I very first started to come around to these rooms, I came to my first NA meeting the third Wednesday in October 2008 and didn't get clean until almost 10 years later. And, like, thought about how service and how other people were of service to me in, like, all of those earlier years is, like, that predominant factor that actually allowed me to be able to, like, enter into a process of recovery. And how, like, sort of the importance of, like, the altruistic nature of service and how, like, being able to practice that principle of altruism or selflessness, you know, and how that helps me to really just, like, find a sense of spirituality in being of service. I think about, like, again, when I first started coming around and, like, being on the receiving end of, like, a 12-step, I remember back in probably right around 2012, 2013, I used to go to this Sunday night candlelight meeting that I remember I was leaving one time and walking out of this church with, like, 50 other people, and I turned to the guy who was on my left, and I asked him for a ride home, and he gave me a ride home and, like, talked to me the whole way. And I stopped coming around to the rooms for a while, like, shortly thereafter, and I remember, like, not seeing him again after that. And then I remember in September of 2015, I was hitchhiking at a gas station to try to get back home, and I asked this lady for a ride, and she's like, I don't feel comfortable doing that. She's like, why don't you ask that guy over there? And I went and asked him, and he drove me home, and I saw the signs on his work truck and started talking to him, and he's like, why don't you, you know, come and work with me a couple days a week? And met up with him a few days later, and he's like, my boss actually wants to come meet you. And his boss pulled up, and it was this guy, Jeff W., who gave me a ride home from that meeting a few years earlier. And I'm still in the midst of active addiction at that time, and inevitably wound up getting fired. Or as I like to say, that I fired myself. There's something about when you're doing door-to-door sales and you go up to somebody's house and ring the bell, and by the time they open the door, you're halfway to the ground and a nod, like some sort of fucked up joke. And, like, that just doesn't really bode too well with your employers, apparently. So that was kind of the end of that at that point. And I didn't see Jeff again after that until a few years later, when I happened to be going to get my hair cut one day, and who happens to be sitting next to me waiting also was him. And he had a conversation with me that actually set me up on the path to be able to, you know, have that sort of initial surrender, right? And, like, you know, when I think about being able to, like, be of service to other people, like, and how it is that the spiritual nature of that, like, I'm not going to really spend too much time standing up here and talking about, like, how it is that I implement and practice a 12-step in my life because of that principle of altruism or selflessness, that I find that, like, the integrity in that is really just doing the right thing for the right reasons at the right time without any expectation in return. And, you know, that also went against, like, a lot of what it is that I knew most of my life, which is that, like, a lot of my relationships were all transactional, and they were also overwrought with obligation, right? Because she's your mom, you should do this. Because they're this, you should do that. Because I did this for you, you should do that. And it's like, even in my life today, being able to have those sort of selfless, service-centered relationships that I have with other people in the rooms is, like, so important to me in my recovery. Because it's like, even with members of, like, my own family or people that are, like, closest to me in that way, like, sometimes, you know, somebody asked me that recently. They're like, you know, how do you feel about, like, the way it is that they tend to handle things? And I'm like, well, you know, for the most part, they all have compassion and empathy right up until that moment when I'm no longer able to serve their needs anymore. And then all of a sudden it's a problem. And it's like, that's not what I found with the relationships it is that I have with other people in the rooms, and the importance of that, and the way it is that we're able to be of service, like, to each other, to help each other grow in that way. I remember my therapist asking it to me. He's like, what would, like, 15-year-old version of you think of, like, you know, the way that, you know, other people are in your life? And I'm like, well, 15-year-old version of me was more of the eating Vicodin and listening to Project Pat time in my life, that I don't think that version of myself would have much to say about anything, right? But when being of service, I tend to always think about the last paragraph in our fifth tradition, which states that, what is our message? The message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose a desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, because that is all we have to give. And, like, you know, when it comes to doing certain things, like, you know, sponsoring other individuals, for instance, like, in the beginning stages of that, it was, like, almost like being a parent for the first time. It was, like, questioning everything. Like, you know, do I have the right thing to be able to say here? Do I have the right tools, the right resources? Have I done enough work in this area? You know, and it's, again, I know that, like, the only thing it is that I can predominantly give is, like, my experience and my message and all of that. And that it's not, like, a transactional sort of relationship either of, like, I always think about how intentions will drive my actions forward in that way. And that, like, when thinking about, like, when I am of service to other people, like, how I can do that to the best of my ability by way of the spiritual principles it is that I learned about. You know, like that first step principle of acceptance and the importance of that, of being able to accept other people for where it is that they're at and meeting them at their level of willingness, to not think that, like, I am going to be, you know, this person that can help to, like, change this other person in this way. because otherwise, you know, when, if my ego assumes responsibility for the outcome of their recovery or what it is that they are trying to do, like, it sort of mitigates that responsibility it is that I have to myself and to other people when being of service. And, like, you know, also remembering that trying to never operate from a place of egotism, of being like, well, this is all the things it is that worked for me, so therefore it universally has to work for every last person I encounter. You know, and again, remembering that, like, I can't give by throwing. And that it's also important to remember that, like, I also, when they talk about, like, freely giving away the things it is that were given to me, for me, the importance in that is also remembering to be able to be of service to myself, because it's difficult to freely give something away that I feel as though I struggle to contain within myself to begin with. And I know that the best thing it is that I can do to be of service to somebody else is to be of service to myself. And the best thing that somebody else can do for me is to be of service to themselves. And if at some point our paths converge, we'll be in a far greater position to be able to help one another in that way. And that, again, it's not about trying to, like, control the outcome of these situations either, in that I always also think about, like, the third step and what it means to, like, live within the will of the God in my understanding, and what it means to be able to actually, like, turn it over when being of service, which, you know, what I've learned is that it's really just about taking action up to a certain point, and that anything that happens beyond that is beyond the power of my control. And that I'm powerless to be able to do anything outside of just what it is that I'm capable of being able to bring to the table. And also not confusing trying to care for somebody else as also trying to be able to control somebody else. Remembering that true love and service to other people is also about respecting other people's autonomy. And not trying to tell them, like, this is what you need to be doing. This is what you should be doing. Only thing I can talk about is this is what I might do in that situation. Or that this is something it is that we can, you know, maybe consider as an option in this situation. And it's by practicing, you know, sort of that level of acceptance in being of service in that way that allows me to be able to also maintain a sense of peace in that. Because it's like that peace really gives way to that sort of spiritual nature that comes as a result of being able to be of service to other people. That it's like, if my intention is focused on trying to, like, fix or to control or to change, it, like, sort of just diminishes that sense of peaceful approach it is that I can have towards, you know, being able to be of service to other people. And, you know, also remembering too that, like, acceptance doesn't mean allowance. Like, also that acceptance does not mean tolerance of intolerable behaviors. And that I'm also not going to be the person to be like, you know, yeah, that's totally fine if it's not. Or, yeah, you should totally go ahead and go through with that if I know that it's probably not in line with, like, spiritual principles or ideals or values, you know, or other things it is that I hold important. And it's like, by also being able to practice that, I tend to sort of gain, like, the greatest levels of joy it is that I have in my life when being of service. That true, like, eudaimonistic sense of happiness that also goes against, like, everything it is that I knew about happiness, which I thought that happiness was derived from hedonistic pleasure, you know, using, doing the things it is that I did when I was using, and that I confused the feelings of pleasure that, like, drugs and alcohol gave me with actual feelings of happiness, and I told myself that, like, this is what actual happiness is, until I actually got to experience what true happiness was by being able to show up for myself and in the lives of other people in that as well. And that it's, you know, really just trying to do that to the best of my ability, and also being able to try to meet myself at my own level of my needs, because that will vary from day to day. It's like some days I, you know, might be totally up for being able to do the things it is that I do as it relates to service, and other days it might be, you know, a little bit more difficult that I have to take more time for self before being able to step up to the plate in order to do that to the best of my ability. And it's like, sure, do I get fired up about spending 45 minutes on the phone with some guy at 10:30 at night who's about to AMA from their recovery house and go use because somebody drank their last Mountain Dew? Not necessarily. You know, will I do it every single time without fail? Yes, because that is what it is that I learned the ability to be able to do, is to be able to show up to the best of my ability in whatever way it is that I can. And also that the moment that I expect my kindness to be able to change somebody, what it does is that it also turns into this sort of like transactional relationship where I, you know, extend kindness or I extend service to somebody else with the intention of trying to change them. And then I step back and wait for a return on my investment. And then all of a sudden that doesn't happen. And what happens? I'm just resentful. Or, you know, I try to assert will in that situation or other things like that. And that's why, again, like the importance of being able to practice true selflessness, being able to practice acceptance, being able to practice the ability to let go. And it's like, for me, taking it back to that like third step of living within the will of the God of my understanding, I really just base that off of feeling, right? It's like, I might not always have the perfect answer or the right answer or things like that to be able to give to somebody else, but more often than not, I will know exactly what the wrong answer is by way of that feeling that tells me, like, you've done everything it is that you can here. And that sometimes also remembering that helping means not helping. And that sometimes if I am that person who consistently tries to show up time and time again, that I might just actually be depriving somebody of that gift of desperation that they would have been granted if I would have actually just turned it over and stepped back. And to also remember that the day it is that I plant the seed is not the day that I bear the fruit. And that, like, there were things that were even said to me when I first started coming around at, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old that didn't land until 10 years later. Until I was at a point and time in my life when I was ready to be able to, like, actually start to internalize that. And that being able to, like, try to micromanage other individuals or other areas of service in my life, that's does not give way to that sense of, like, peacefulness and spiritual principles it is that I try to exert in those moments of being able to be of service. And, like, for me, too, the beauty of service is that it's also really what kind of gives way to the unity of our program, and that there are a lot of different moving parts to service, whether it's from the person who sets up chairs in a meeting to the person who sponsors other individuals to the person who sits on a committee or who does H&I or all of these different things. And I look at it in the same way that I do, like, other things, like the person performing brain surgery is no more or less important than the person sterilizing the surgical tools, because both of those roles are necessary in order to facilitate the end result. And that it's, you know, the things it is that we bring to the table when it is that we are of service that help to really make up, like, the beauty of what this program is, which is that therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And in that too, like, also remembering that in being able to be of service to myself, it was also important, or before getting to that stage of, like, actually practicing that 12 step and being of service to other individuals, that it was also important to, like, clean up a lot of the internal things it is that I did in those preceding steps. Because when I talk about how, like, intention drives action forward, it's like, if my intention of being of service to other people is really just to utilize you and your problems as a distraction from myself and what it is that I have going on with me, then it becomes a problem. If, you know, I'm acting out on defects of character, of people-pleasing and conflict avoidance, to where I said yes to four different service commitments and I have three home groups and I have 10 sponsees and I have all these different things that prevent me from even being able to show up for myself for 30 minutes, then again, it doesn't fall in line with those sort of spiritual principles and ideals and values and things like that that I hold meaning to, right? And it's really finding that balance in all of that between, you know, being able to practice a level of selfless service to other people, but also being able to remember that I have to show up for myself before I can show up for others sometimes as well. And that I can do that also from a place of like non-judgmentalism. And the importance of that too is like once you sort of really dive into a lot of those steps leading up to that 12th one and really get in touch and face to face and practice a level of self-acceptance, particularly in those 6 and 7 steps of those different parts of myself that might be difficult and find peace with that, it's like it makes it a whole lot easier to be able to find peace with other people and what it is that they might have going on and to not take things personally or not judge somebody for what they may or may not be doing. And to be able to simply be more okay with that, right? And it's like, and just simply trying to do what it is that I can, where I can, and again, finding that balance in between. It's almost like putting salt on a meal, like just the right amount of it, and it will create the perfect taste and texture to that meal. Too much of it, and it is completely ruined, right? In the same way that like if I have too much service in different areas in my life outwardly to where I don't have the ability to do that as much inwardly to myself, things will feel out of balance. And then all of a sudden, it's just, I'm just resentful, you know? I just, you know, don't have the same time or attention or energy to put forth into it as I could if I actually just find that middle path in between all of those things. And to be able to just simply tend to my own values and remember that it is also not my weight to be able to carry. That it's like, you know, for me, I also learned that my recovery was my responsibility and that I had to be able to do it for myself and nobody else could do it for me. That it was my path and my path alone, and that other people could walk it with me, but they couldn't walk it for me. And I also have to be able to remember that when trying to show up for other people sometimes too. Just remembering again that like I can only try to help and to be of service where it is that I can, right? Like I always think about the parable of the boy who was walking along the beach after this storm when the tide rolled out, and there was all these thousands of starfish along the beach. And he began picking them up and throwing them back into the ocean to save them. And this man was walking along the beach and stopped and asked him. And he's like, what difference do you think it's really going to make, you know, doing what it is that you're doing when there are all these starfish covering this beach? And he looked up at him and he smiled and he picked up one more and he threw it into the ocean. And he said, well, it made a difference to that one. And it's like, I know that that's all it is that I can really do most of the time is just to simply try to show up for even just one other person, even if it's just myself. And by being able to do that, right, it's like, again, I find that peaceful balance in things. I find that ability to be able to sort of move from the self-centered, self-seeking nature that was my addiction, where everything was transactional. You know, what can I do for you so that I can get what I need? What do you have for me? What it is that I can give to you, or vice versa, versus, you know, again, just simply being able to show up for other people because it's just simply the right thing to be able to do. And by being able to do that, like, recognizing how it is that it actually, like, fills me up spiritually in those moments, right? And just how, like, you know, for me, the length of my recovery is determined in those moments when nobody else is around except for me and my thoughts, right? And it's like, who am I when I'm alone in the dark at 3 a.m.? Can I fall asleep peacefully every night knowing that, you know, I live by certain principles and values and that, you know, I hold, you know, these different things close to me to the best of my ability? And it's like by being able to do that and being able to like be of service to myself in that way is, you know, really what keeps me the most centered in everything else in my recovery, right? It's like when I straighten out spiritually in the steps, I recognize how it is that I straighten out mentally and physically and emotionally in every other single area of my life. You know, but when I like start to distance myself from those things, it's like all of a sudden then it becomes very imbalanced. And it's like tough when I'm like, you know, just trying to like keep it together and feeling like, how am I expected to show up for anybody else when I'm just like struggling to show up for myself in these moments? And that's why it's again, like sort of finding that middle path and that way of balance. So it's like in that, in being able to learn the ability to be more of service to myself and what that looks like in my life today. It's like, as life has continued to evolve for me in my recovery of, like, having the things it is that I have in my life today that they talk about, like, you know, the life beyond my wildest dreams and, like, all of those outward successes, it's like, for one, I recognize that any of those outward successes are only just a direct reflection of the internal successes it is that I've had. But what I also recognize is that, like, for a lot of it, those things I don't value nowhere near as much as I do the spiritual principles that allowed me to get those things to begin with. And that when I practice that ability to be able to try to cultivate those things daily, staying connected to those things that make up sort of the foundation of my recovery in that way, you know, it's what helps me to be able to show up for other people. And it's like, as soon as I start to, like, back off from any of those things, I will recognize, like, where that shift occurs in my life, right? You know, it's like some of the people that close to me, like, heard me talk about it before. Like, it'd almost be like, you know, if I left this meeting and, like, went home and walked into my kitchen and just unplugged my refrigerator, right? It's like, sure, all of the shit inside of there might look good for a period of time, but it is only a matter of time before everything inside of there deteriorates completely. In the same way that if I unplug from meeting attendance, prayer, meditation, literature, step work, a relationship with my sponsor, service, network, all of these things, it is only a matter of time before I will deteriorate spiritually on the inside. And then everything else is just a domino effect of everything else in my life. And it makes it difficult to be able to, you know, feel as though I'm filling my cup spiritually by being able to be of service to other people when I'm struggling to show up for myself in that way. You know, and it's by really being able to practice, again, that balancing between both of those different things that allows me to have that sort of therapeutic value of one addict helping another ever present in my life, and, you know, the interactions it is that I have with other individuals and sponsorship or being a sponsee or, you know, being able to show up at my home group every week or even just some of the simplicity of those other things. And by way of that, like, it really keeps me centered in a sense of gratitude for, like, the relationships it is that I have in my life today with the other individuals that I do. And that gratitude speaks when I care, when I share with others anyway. And thank you for letting me share.
All right, I would like to thank Nick for sharing. I'll introduce our second speaker. Her name is Nikki.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict. My name is Nikki.
Hey, Nikki.
And thanks again, Nick, for sharing. You really set the tone in reference to service. When I saw the topic, service of the soul, and I thought about when I first came in, and I came in, I hate to, you know, date myself, but it is what it is. I came in with, you know, the ABCs, the ashtrays, the brooms, and chairs, and service wasn't optional when I came in. When I first came into recovery, it was, you will do this. I didn't even pick my first sponsor. She picked me. And she gave me my service commitment. Well, let's be clear. I hated everything about that. I was already beat up from drugs, right? My self-esteem was low. I couldn't possibly think of anything that I had to give that anyone would want. You already had told me that, you know, I needed to admit that I was powerless, that my life was unmanageable. I was like, for these strangers, they are asking an awful lot of stuff. Out of one person. The nerve of these people. You know, so what? I had lost my job teaching school in Baltimore. So what? I had lost my husband and my marriage, and everything we had pretty much went in the pipe or the wrapper or the whatever. We smoked it, we snorted it, it was all gone. So I get here and I'm thinking, all I really need to do is just stay. I don't necessarily care about getting better. I just need to know how I'm not going to use again. And so giving me a job was the last thing that I wanted. And I smoked, but damn if I wanted to clean your ashtray. You know, my own maybe. And my own chair. And we mopped the floors, you know. And as I said, my sponsor gave me my first service commitment. I don't know why she saw me from across the room when I first came in from treatment. And I'm, you see, I'm pretty tall, but I tried to like hide, and you're tall too. And so what I wanted to do was just kind of like, you know, be invisible almost. And she came across the room and she said, I'm going to help you. And I'm looking, my sponsor is this tall, right? And I'm thinking, how this little lady going to help me? And she said, I want you to be the greeter. And I was like, greet who? Well, you know, is this an event? Who are we greeting? And she said, you need to stand at the door and tell people, welcome, you're glad that they're here. And I was thinking, how in the hell am I going to be glad they're here, and I'm not even glad I'm here? That makes no sense to me at all. And she said, it's okay if it doesn't make sense. Just keep coming back. And I stood at the door, and I came in through the other fellowship, you know, and I stood at the door, and I had this ugly look. I was mad as fire. And so she came and she tapped me and she said, you know, you have to smile. And I said, what? She said, you telling the people you're glad they are here. So tell your face to tell the people that you're glad. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm really not liking this little lady at all. And I hadn't really decided if I was going to let her sponsor me, but I, you know, I was almost like afraid of her to a certain degree, even though she was this little, you know, but it was just something about her, and she wouldn't let me hide. And so I did the greeting commitment, and I went, and I sat in the chair in the back, and I'm thinking, this is over. And she said, no, they need a coffee maker. And I was like, another job? I don't even have that much clean time, you know. She was like, yeah. Because people chat when they at the coffee pot. You know, they mix in, and they say, hi, how you doing? They make small talk. And she said, that's what I want you to get in the habit of doing, is making small talk with people, and then eventually you'll get better, and you'll be able to have longer conversations. But just do that, right? And so I did what she suggested. And I still wasn't getting what she was going for, but what I knew was that I was afraid to go back to West Baltimore, to go back anywhere but where I was. And I was in Laurel. I like to call it Mayberry. I thought that the only thing you do is go to the racetrack. I didn't think people lived there, you know, because where I lived in Baltimore, there was no cow on Main Street with little baskets hanging. That's not, you know, that's not what it looked like. And so here I am in Mayberry, and there's Andy and Aunt B and, you know, the sheriff and all that. All that was really foreign to me, but it felt safe, right? And it was real distant from where I had come from. And I was in a halfway house, and the service there was, we had chores that we had to do. And it was just like becoming regimented again, like a system again, because I had been at the animalistic level. I had remembered what everything looked like when I left. And so as I'm understanding a little bit about service, I still am not getting that helping other people is going to help me, right? Because I'm thinking, what do I have? I have nothing. You know, I've lost everything. How could that possibly help anyone? And so when she and I started doing step work together, and you sort of alluded to it, she said, I want to sponsor you because it'll help me. And I'm thinking, how is that going to work? You know, and she said, just trust me. And that was the first time that I had trusted anybody clean. I had trusted whatever you gave me. I had trusted what I bought. I had trusted to go down alleys. I had trusted a lot of things, but I hadn't ever trusted anybody when I was clean. You know, and trusting them with my emotions and my feelings, you know, where do they do that at? But for some reason, it was a feeling of love that came from her that said, I got you. No, even though I don't know you, I got you. You know, and even before that, when I went to the women's halfway house, and I could have gone back to Baltimore, so I thought, I still had my keys. My husband and I had separated, and I still had my keys to my mama house. I thought I could still go back home. Well, I'm here to inform you that I carried that key for a year. My mother changed the locks when I went to treat. So let's be clear, that key didn't work, right? So I thought I could go back to Baltimore. And when I went to the women's halfway house, even before, you know, the sponsor part, And I was telling the, I was going to tell the lady that opened the door, you know, I appreciate the offer of being in the women's halfway house, but I had my little 28 days. I'm good. You know, I don't need this. And when I rang the doorbell, and this was the ugliest house in the world you ever could have gone to. It was around Halloween. The whole house looked slanted and looked like something off a Scream or something. It was just crazy. And I was going to tell the lady, never mind. And she opened the door and she said, you must be Nikki. And I said, yes. And I said, and before I could say anything else, she hugged me. And I fell to my knees. You know, Swiss cheese with all the holes. It was like some of the holes started filling in from that hug. And the reason I mentioned this lady, I kind of got off, is because she has dementia now. And that was service at its best that I watched her help so many women coming through that women's halfway house. And to see her now, and she doesn't know who we are, it's hard to take. But the service I can give to her is I keep coming back. And I show up. And I show up for the women that might come to that door like I came to that door. You know, and I knew I was going to cry. That's why I didn't put on eyeliner. And, you know, you end up looking like Rocky Raccoon up here. And, and so the service, you know, started out even just craziness. Like people would call you and come to their house and put stuff together, you know, come put my bookshelf together, you do it together. And this may sound utterly ridiculous, but what it did for me was it killed some of that dead time. You know, that time that, so I didn't get bored. That time I wasn't thinking about using. So before I knew it, the obsession and the compulsion was gone. I wasn't thinking about the next one and the next one. I wasn't thinking about what I had left in Baltimore, what I needed to fix. I wasn't thinking about, you know, family situations where they would be inviting me to events. And I said, no, you know, they told me change people, places, and things. I hadn't been to funerals and baby showers and weddings and I don't know how long. So now all of a sudden I got 30 days clean, 60 days clean. I need to be at the family event. Nobody was looking for me. They didn't want me to show up because the last time I was there, I was a hot mess. You know, so I had to learn how to tell myself, just for the day, Nikki, focus. Stay right here, just for the day. The next part of service was being a home group member. You know, finding a place that I could be safe. Finding a place that I could learn how to be myself. Because I had sort of forgot who myself was. And right now, I seem to be speaking with some passion and stuff like that. And sure, I was trained to speak as a educator and all that. But once I came in here, I had lost all that. I was looking down. I wasn't looking people directly in the eye. I wore black all the time because I was sort of in mourning. I just felt so bad about myself. Like, how did you get here? You're college educated. How did this happen? You had two parents. How did you do this? How did you lose everything? And that's what I felt. I wasn't even thinking about the fact that being in a room with you all were me. So how could you judge me? I couldn't think outside of my own box, right? That somehow I was just worthless. So to keep coming back, the self-esteem started coming back a little bit more. Being in a home group. I've been in the same home group for over 30 years. My home group is the most dysfunctional home group you ever want to go to. If you like structure, we're not it. And I absolutely love it. It is my home, right? Because that's what a home group is supposed to be, a place where you feel home. And we do have, you know, structure, but it's still a freedom in that room that has appealed to me forever. And that's what they said. They said, find the suit that fits you. And when I walk in that room, I just feel safe, you know, like, I don't have to worry about it being messy or who's doing this with that. This is none of that. And even if any of that's going on, I'm not participating in it, right? Because I learned from the people that were here before me. If I don't bring the mess, it won't be a mess. And when it's messy, walk away, you know, and I'm good at walking away. So you know, the home group. I've had positions in the home group. But then the next part of service was at the area level. Well, before then, the group conscious. I hated group conscious, right? I hated all that. I second, I motion, I third, all the ayes, all the nays, all the whos. I hated all of that, right? Because I'm thinking, why do these drug addicts need all this order? You know, what is that about? So, but what I learned was that's exactly what we need. You know, to be able to govern ourselves, that's exactly what we need. Because if not, then it's total chaos, right? But I am so grateful for being a part of Group Conscious, being a GSR, any position that I took, because I was also able to take that on my job when I became employable again. Because I wasn't employable for a while, you know, so I was able to learn how to agree to disagree. I was learning to understand that, okay, so she didn't like your suggestion. That doesn't mean that you're stupid. That doesn't mean that it wasn't a good suggestion. It just means that someone else had another one and they voted on that one. It ain't that personal, Nikki. Don't take it so personal. So I learned those things just being in service. And I didn't think that that would, I didn't think that I would benefit in that way. I wasn't sure again. And so then the next thing in service was sponsorship. You know, I had built a relationship with my sponsor, with my grand sponsor. And in fact, there were times when I even went to my grand sponsor about situations because she had that experience and I didn't, right? Like, I don't have kids. So, and it was painful because I always wanted kids. But because of a medical condition, I couldn't have kids. And so when people would invite me to events with children early in recovery, it was almost like PTSD. It was painful for me. And I had to learn how to be able to say, I would love to come, but I'm unable to. And that didn't necessarily mean I needed to go through a great long explanation. It just meant that I needed to be true to myself, that it was painful for me to participate in some of those events. And I got that from my grand sponsor because she also had the same situation. So then it was myself becoming a sponsor. And I was sort of like you, you know, what do I have? I don't even know if I want to do this. What is this about? You know, and I wasn't sure. And thank God for the pamphlet about sponsorship, you know, to sort of give you some guidance. But then, like I said, I came in early and we didn't have it fancy like that. What it was people passing it along. You know, what would make me a good sponsor? And the main thing that would make me a good sponsor is that I just show up. And I try to do the best that I can, and I try to say what I'm going to do and keep my word. Some consistency. And when I can't, be able to say that. You know, even now, when I sponsor people, I started out with, let's have a conversation. Now, everyone may not agree with the way that it worked, but it works for me. Let's just start having a conversation. Let's negotiate. What do you need and what can I give? And if at any time it doesn't fit, by all means, please get your help. Don't die on my account. And don't be in the meeting talking bad about me when you could just change. When you could just come to me and say, this isn't working. But all that ying, 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 and I'm, no. That subgrouping about how it's not working for you, that is so unproductive for me. So I would prefer that you just say, you know what, Nikki, this isn't working. And women have said that, and I so appreciate it. Because that way I also can ask, is there anything I could have done differently? Because I'm not perfect. Did I miss phone calls? Did I not respond timely? Did we not go through the steps the way that you would have liked? Right? Because I take that information on my job about lessons learned. And if they say, well, yeah, you were sort of unavailable, I can say, you know what? I'm sorry about that. I apologize for that. And I hope your next experience with your sponsor will be a little bit better. You know, even I started caring for my mom like the last 5 or 6 years. She passed not too long ago. And the women that I sponsored me. And I had to be open to that. But I also called each one of them, I believe, and said, I have to care for my mom. I'm not going to be as available as I was. By all means, if you think you need to do something different, please do. Please do. But I still want us to communicate. I still need your help. I still need you to cheer me on while I'm trying to care for my mother. I still need that, right? And so just doing that opened the door for a level of honesty that I hadn't really experienced before. Because I was just a person, you know, passive aggressive. I'm just going, go ghost. Not answer your calls. Oh, God, is she calling again? What's she want? Right? You know, I'm just not going to answer. But to be able to sort of come into that womanhood, to stand up and be able to look people in the eye and say, you know, even the sponsees that I've had to say, I don't fire or anything, but I have had to call and say, you know, we really don't seem to be doing anything right now. What can we do about this? And then I've had, you know, I think about service and that sometimes you meet people at the level of their needs. And I have people that it's not that they may not read as well, you know, or whatever, their life situations, family, they don't have a lot of time. You know, thank God we're in a place where the literature is on CD, it's everywhere. You know, and even a young lady I sponsored, she said, it's just so many questions. And I had to laugh because when I first came around, if I had even thought about saying it's that many questions, I might have got put in timeout, you know. But I listened and I said, well, do you want to do 5 questions at a time? How's that? How's that work for you? And she was almost like relieved. You know, and I said, you know, this is not I'm not going to grade your paper. I'm not checking grammar or anything like that. It's step work so that you can get better with yourself and we can get to know each other better. But if 5 questions at a time, if that's what you need, fine. I'm okay with that. It really is okay. And so, again, being in service sort of helped me understand it's not all one way. And it doesn't have to be all my way. And that's not something that was easy. I'm an only child. When I grew up, I had all the toys. I had all the dodgeballs and stuff. When I didn't like what was happening, game over. I took the ball in the house. I didn't give a damn. If the game was, what? I'm out? Oh, ball in the house. Game over. Right? But you all taught me that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It can be balance in this thing, right? And I'm so grateful, just so, so grateful for that. I serve on a couple of boards in reference to this fellowship. That was another thing I did for service. And I did it because I wanted to get better on my job in project meetings. Because I wanted to basically understand the bigger picture. I'm a trainer by nature. I taught kindergarten. I teach adults now. They don't listen either. It's the same skill set. But what I wanted to be able to do was to see it at a higher level, not just that one course, not just that one class. And so I figured if I volunteer for the board, that's me seeing something higher. That's me seeing planning 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So I wanted to, they said, practice these things in all your affairs, right? And so I saw some deficiencies in myself, right? So that's a defect, so to speak. And I thought, they said, the solution is here. So I thought, why not? And so being a part of those boards has helped me. In my profession. And a lot of times what it has helped me to do is just shut up. What a gift. Just to shut up. You know, because I've looked at this, and I'm able to look at things from a different way. And again, this is what you talked about, service to yourself. In some of my situations, some of the people are very early in their career. Some are in the middle of their career. And some are like me, sliding on the home soon, right? The energy level is different. So why are you fighting, Nikki, against this energy force that you don't have to? So in some cases, just shut up. Or either if they suggest something, even though it was something that we tried before, oh, really? Let me know how that works out for you and how can I help? Now I know it's going to bomb. It bombed before. But that doesn't mean I have to get in the way of it. It means I can make myself of service, and then I can offer any information that I can, and if I don't have any, I can just shut up. Oh my goodness. Shutting up is the gift that I never really had. Because my mother used to say I should have been a lobbyist. Because I wanted to have the last word about everything. And now it's not so much. It's just not that deep for me right now. You know, I told you, you know, my mom passed. It'll be 2 years in December. And because of this program, the person that I was the least in service for when I was using, I became the best servant I ever could be. And I was able to be there with my mom and care for her. And you all came in to help me. So whenever I have an opportunity, I always want to say thank the members of Narcotics Anonymous for helping me stay clean and helping me show up for my mom. I even was able to show up for the cat. So the cat even got a new home. And you all helped me do that. You know, I'm truly the person that I am. Not so much because I am selfless every day. It's just because I try to think of the next person. And when I'm not at my best, and you talked about it, I take a nap. The power of shutting up and the nap is everything. I don't know where that is in the steps, but it should be, in my opinion. In my opinion. So when I'm not feeling like I want to serve, I can feel it. You all know when you go to in the line and the line is moving slow and you start to get antsy and you're looking at the people, we're like, why is she moving so slow? So what I do is I make friends with the people in the line behind me. And if that doesn't work, then I just put all the stuff on and say, I said, this isn't a good shopping day. And I go home. Right? And those are the things that you taught me so I can be of service to myself, the cashier, and mankind. Thanks for letting me share.